Good morning, guys. I am Ellie. I think most of you know me. I am married to Ryan, and I have three amazing boys. You've probably seen all of them around as well. This morning, I want to talk to you about friendship. I know as people, when we hear a message, we hear someone speak to us, we're really hoping for a plan or a formula, a list of tips that we can follow. We say to the speaker, I see what you've done there. I would like you to give me the plan to do exactly that and come up with the premium package result. But often we forget that the best ideas that the speakers have are often earned through either hard work or a hard trial or even a combination of the two. And we just want the tips, but without the hard work or the trials to back them up, we're not going to get the same result that they did. And even if somehow we could get a result without the work, because we're different people, it's not going to produce the same thing in us that it did in them. So today what I have for you is not a formula. It's not a list. It's not a plan. What it is kind of a collection of things that I've done and the result that I achieved through those things. And hopefully there'll be something in there that you think, yeah, maybe I could try that. Maybe I would get a similar result. It reminds me of this recipe that someone asked me for the other day. I like a recipe. I have a math brain, so I like following a list of numbers that I know is going to work. But this is one of the few things that I cook that I don't use a recipe for. It's my mom's carbonara. Now, just to start out, I'll say that my idea of carbonara is very different from Australians' idea of carbonara. And I think that's key when you are following someone else's list and formula, is you want to make sure that the end result they're talking about is the same result that you want. So I have this recipe, and one of my girls emailed and said, hey, can you send me the recipe? And I said, well, yeah, except it's not really any good. But I'll tell you what I do. It's different kind of every time. But whatever you do, it's going to be delicious. So that's the kind of the recipe I have for you today. We'll talk about some things we're going to do, and the result is going to be good. When I sent her the recipe, it looked a bit like this. For one pack of spaghetti, get some bacon. My mom's original recipe said 6 pieces, but I'm pretty sure I always at least double it. Kind of depends on what I have in the fridge. Sometimes I use too much, but you know, whatever, it's bacon. Chop it. You're gonna need an onion or half an onion. It kind of depends on what I have in the kitchen and who's eating, because some of the kids don't like onions, and sometimes I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll be nice to them today. You're gonna chop that. You're gonna cook the bacon and the onion together. And then you're gonna put some cream, like cream or milk, really whatever you have in the fridge. Just chuck a little bit of that into the pan and then just keep cooking it until the milk basically disappears. What it does is it coats the bacon and the onions and it makes the pasta creamier. Then you need to put the pasta on. Actually, you should have done this a while ago. You need to put the pasta boiling, and when you do that, when you put the water on, you want to crack 2 eggs into a bowl and then put some Parmesan cheese in. Not the good Parmesan cheese. You need the cheap, nasty stuff that you get in the like warm food aisle next to the pasta. You probably want about the same amount as the eggs, maybe less. It should still be a bit liquid. So you mix that up with a fork, and then you leave the fork in the bowl and walk away. Come back in a few minutes and you're gonna pick this fork up out of the bowl. And when you do that, if the hole in the bottom of the egg and cheese mixture stays just in that same shape, you know you've got the amounts just right. But if you pick it up and it just fills right back in, you gotta add more cheese, mix it again, and let it set. Or if you've forgotten to do the cheese, just like throw a bit in there, mix it up, you're good to go, it's gonna be fine. Then once the pasta is boiled, you need to make sure, this is where the magic happens, you want everything to kind of be ready at exactly the same moment. So you want the bacon to be cooked and the pasta to be cooked perfectly timed together, which never happens. So you're probably gonna need to just put the bacon on another minute. But when the pasta's done, drain it real fast, throw it in a bowl, throw the cheese and egg mixture in, throw the bacon in, mix it all up, and the hot pasta will cook the egg and make it kind of saucy onto the pasta. It's delicious. You're going to love it. Obviously, it's not a good recipe, and I'm sorry. I hope it turns out for you. So what I've got for you today is a bit like that recipe. It's just rambly bits of trial and error that I've found successful. And that even though what you'll do with them is different from what I do, maybe there'll be some ideas along the way that will help you to understand as well that I think you're heading in the right direction. I was thinking, when I thought about friendship, I was thinking about that verse in Ecclesiastes. You know the one that talks about a cord of three strands is not easily broken. The way I often hear that verse explained is in the context of marriage. That there's, you have two people, that's the couple, and then if you invite God by prayer to really be an active part of your life in that relationship, then that relationship will not easily be broken. And I've also heard of it as kind of warriors on the battlefield, that you need somebody to watch your back while you're in battle. But when I read that verse, I always think it's just about whatever you're living, that you need people along with you for the ride. And that just sounds a lot like friendship to me. I'm going to read it for you. It's Ecclesiastes 4, verses 9 through 12. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. I want to read it in the Message as well. It says the same thing, but it's a different kind of poetry than the NIV. And if it's honest, it's the kind of poetry that often speaks better to my soul. It makes me think of music. When a new artist will redo and remake a song, an old song. And so one of the boys will bring me the song and they'll be like, "Mom, this song is so good. You've got to listen to this." And I'll be like, I know this song. I could have told you it was good. And they roll their eyes. "Sure, Mom. Sure, your song was good." And they just, you know, roll their eyes until I understand that as an old lady, I actually don't know what good music is. And so I walk away and I think that's fine, because we're actually listening to the same song. It has different language and it has a different beat, but the message is still the same. And I'm okay with that. But don't tell my kids, because they think that I don't know what good music is. They think theirs is better. So I'll read it in the Message. It's better to have a partner than to go it alone. Share the work, share the wealth. And if one falls down, the other helps. But if there's no one to help, tough. Two in a bed warm each other, and alone you shiver all night. By yourself, you're unprotected, and with a friend, you can face the worst. Can you round up a third? A three-stranded rope isn't easily snapped. So one is not enough, and two is better. But more is even better. I'm remembering that Ecclesiastes is a poetry book. So even though Solomon says three, it seems to me that that might not actually be a hard number. That there's probably a cultural reason that he chose a cord of three strands, but it's poetry. So what it really seems to me is two is more, or two is good, but more is better. Just don't have so many that those relationships become unmanageable. A cord of three strands is not easily broken, but neither are those ropes in the gym that are like this massive. But have you ever tried to lift one of those? It's not something you can use in your daily life. It's unmanageable, it's unwieldy, it's heavy. So we need to make sure that even though we're looking for more, we keep it small. Sometimes in our ideas that more is better, we just gather all of the people around us and we just create friendships everywhere. But if we try to have too many close friends, somebody always gets hurt. I've done that. I've tried to gather too many people close to me and I just can't keep up. I've heard people say that having a large group of friends is good, but you've got to have a smaller group of close friends. When I moved to Australia, almost 9 years ago, I needed to make new friends. I had my sister here, and I still do, but even then, we hadn't lived together, even on the same continent, for probably 16 years. So even that relationship needed a bit of reacquainting. So I signed up for everything, every single thing. We did play groups, we did swimming lessons, we did cafes, we went to our cafe, we went to the park, we went to the women's Bible study. I talked to every single mom, that might be an exaggeration, but it might not, every single mom at school drop-offs and pickups. I did everything I could think of to put myself next to people who might have something in common with me. And then I talked and I listened and I tried to let them be who they were and not ask them to be what I needed from them. I knew that I'd get what I needed. I knew that if I just kept going, I would find friends. But I also knew that friendships take a long time, that the good, close friendships I wanted take time. And I was really lonely. I was surrounded by people and I was lonely for a good long time. And even though I had beautiful people around me that I knew I would probably be really good friends with them at some point, I wasn't there yet. And I knew it was just gonna take time. Yeah, it was something I felt then, but it's also something I remembered again recently. We went away with a group of friends. They have been friends for upwards of like 15 years. And some of the people I knew really well, and some of the people I actually met for the first time that weekend. When we pulled up at the house, I met these people for the first time. But somehow in my brain, I think because I had such good friends around me, I put these people into the safe category. And I treated these people as if I had been friends with them for years. And so I just spoke whatever I wanted. I said whatever I was thinking. It was a really fun weekend for me. But I did find myself in a couple little situations where I would say a sarcastic joke, which I'm sure surprises you that I do on occasion, often. And all of my close friends would laugh. It was so funny. And I'd be looking around and there was one girl who seemed like she was worried for me and for my relationships. And I found myself feeling like I had to say to her a couple times, no, that was a joke. I only said it was because it was funny. It's not true. That's not true, but it's hilarious. And everyone else is laughing. And I realized again that when you have longevity in a friendship, your words are understood not just by what you say, but by who you are, by the life that you live, and by the character that you have. And when I first moved here, that's what I was missing. And I saw it again then. There's no substitute for time in a friendship. I found that the best way to make new friends is just to treat people as if they're your friends and see if that's something that they need as well. I have a very good friend back in Washington State. We had babies at the same time, and we spent so much time together, all the time together. But the way we became friends is a story that I'll tell you, not because I think you should try it. When I look back now, I'm like, yeah, guys, it's a bit weird, but it worked. So I don't recommend trying this, but I want to tell you because it makes another story make sense later. So this girl came to our church one evening. She had just moved into town, and we met. We found out that we were both pregnant, and we were due just a few days apart. And so we bonded on that, and we just talked the whole evening. It was so fun. And sometime in the course of the night, she told me where she was living, and, you know, oh, yeah, it's on this street. It's a big house. It's kind of olive and maroon colored. You really can't miss it. And so then not long later, I had gone to an appointment in town and I was real close to her house. And I thought, I think I'll just pop in. I'll pop in and say hi. So I knocked on her door with my three-year-old, and she invited us in. And we just stayed the whole day. She made us lunch. The kids played. It was so lovely. And I know as it comes out of my mouth and I think about it, it sounds really strange, but it didn't feel strange. It felt comfortable and it felt good. So I did that. And then she told me the story later that when her husband came home from work, he said, "Oh, how was your day?" And she said, "Actually, it was really weird." She said, That girl from church came over in the morning and she just never left. And he was like, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry." And she was like, "No, it was good." And that's where our friendship started. And from there, we went on to become great friends. And we, again, spent all of our time together. From there, I moved here. We spent all of our time together until we put oceans between us. And then I needed new friends. So like I said, I was doing everything I could. And I met someone and I found a girl that I wanted to be friends with. And so I told my good friend, I said, "I've decided that she's going to be my friend." And my friend in Washington said, "She has no idea what's coming after her." I said, "I know." So I pursued her. I spent so much time with her and we had some really sweet times together. But in the end, she wasn't my close friend. She wasn't the one that I spent all of my time with. Because sometimes you put yourself out there and you end up with a sweet lifelong friendship. And sometimes you put yourself out there and make yourself vulnerable and you don't. And both of those are okay. There was another girl who I desperately wanted to be my bestie. She was so great. She was so fun. But she had a beautiful, strong group around her already. And so I knew that she wasn't going to be that one friend of mine either. And I still love hanging out with her. We still get together and she is amazing. But she's not part of my close friends. She's not part of that small group of mine. And I'm worried that as I'm saying these things, they sound like failures. And you might be thinking, this really isn't encouraging, Ellie. But I actually think it is encouraging. Because if I only told you about the times that I put myself out there and ended up with really great friendships, then you might think that that's all it took. That you just had to be vulnerable and you would end up with great friendships. But now that I tell you, sometimes you put yourself out there and you get a great friendship. And I've put myself out there and I've gotten a sweet friendship for a while. And I put myself out there and sometimes you get a no. It's a no, thank you. And all of those are fine results. None of them is a failure. They're all just different successes in different ways. I want to just circle back to Ecclesiastes to finish up. I want to explain to you why, when I could speak to you about anything in the whole wide world, that in this season of my life, I chose friendship. There's a little part in verse 12 that has made me cry all of the tears recently. And it was this part. It says, "By yourself, you're unprotected. But with a friend, you can face the worst." 1 year ago today, my closest friend had a major aneurysm. And as they do, it came absolutely out of the blue. She was fine 1 minute, and the next minute, we had a phone call saying she was in the hospital and hadn't regained consciousness. And it went from there to scarier and more painful. And each of us who love her had to process that we might actually have to face the worst. So while her husband went down to Brisbane with her, we gathered around her children. And we surrounded them with her friends who just happened to be our children. We played and we laughed, and then someone would remember what happened. And we would cry. And we would answer questions with I don't knows. And I hope so too's. We gave hope where we saw hope. And we gave a shoulder to cry on when we didn't see any hope. And then we gave more play and more fun. And it was a massive cycle of love and fear and uncertainty. But we were not alone, and we faced it together. 7 years ago, when I took my kids to Friday Night Kids and made conversation with this really fun girl, week after week, whose children went to my school, when we chatted and chatted until we decided that maybe we would take our conversation to somebody's house and have dinner so that we didn't have to stop talking, I did it because she was amazing and fun. I did it because her husband and my husband had good, quiet times together. I did it because our children were compatible ages and they had beautiful, fun times together as well. They enjoyed their time playing and laughing. We built a beautiful friendship based on joy and fun and understanding and time. And it grew into a love that makes us call each other family instead of just friends. And in the end, we didn't actually face the worst, but we were pretty close and we did not break. One isn't enough. Two is better, but look for more.